do you see that society is progressing with like the new youth?
It is changing so much. It is changing so much. And I think the show is a reflection of that in a way. It's such a different world than I experienced. And it's kind of this combination of being so happy for the next generation, but also like so jealous.
Absolutely, right?
Yeah.
Hi there, I'm Jen Fricker.
And hello, it's me, Alexi Toliopoulos.
And this is Lived It, the podcast where we speak to everyday Australians and Kiwis who didn't just watch the show or movie everyone's banging on about, they lived it.
And on this episode, we're chatting to a former AFL player who is also an LGBTIQ plus and mental health advocate, Jason Ball.
And of course, a little later, we'll be chatting about a sweet new queer love story called Heartstopper.
Heartstopper is a new series which is based on a popular webcomic, which is also called Heartstopper, by the author Alice Oseman. The story follows protagonist Charlie Springs as a gay teenager who finds himself in a confusing friendship with a jock named Nick, who's also into playing the very quote-unquote masculine game of rugby.
It's a bit of a conundrum for Charlie, as he's not sure if Nick even likes boys, but there are some feelings bubbling away there under the surface.
Well, we are about to find out for ourselves. Let's have a listen to that trailer.
Well, if it isn't Charlie Spring, Happy New Year.
You're over there, next to Nicholas Nelson.
Nick Nelson. He is the star player on the rugby team.
We are a trio of borderline outcasts.
He's different.
It's literally just another silly crush.
It's not a crush.
Hi.
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 He's the straightest person I have ever seen.
Thank you.
How do I stop liking someone, specifically a straight guy?
A question for the ages.
I had something I wanted to ask you. Do you want to go out with me? Do you want to join the rugby team?
What?
Jen, my main takeaway from this show straight away is it's one of the most lovely TV shows I've seen in quite some time. It's so sweet. It's so kind. It's really, really beautiful. I'm so touched by it. And I think I'm in love with it. I think it's fantastic.
This show fills my heart up. I'm so happy it exists. I cried when I watched the first episode because I was like, oh man, I wish something like this existed when I was a kid.
Absolutely. That's what I kept thinking. But I'm so glad it's out there now. I am so excited to talk to you about this show, Jen. I think it's so beautiful. I can't wait to get into the beauty of it all. But before we do that, we've got a wonderful guest on today's podcast, someone who's also watched the show. I can't wait to talk to them about it as well. But we've got Jason Ball, who is best known for coming out as a gay Aussie rules footballer in 2012, which sparked this entire national conversation to challenge homophobia in sport.
Yeah, he's also the founder of Pride Cup Australia and an ambassador for Beyond Blue and the Victorian Pride Centre.
Also in 2017, he was named Young Australian of the Year for Victoria. I cannot think of a more perfect guest to have with us. Jason, thank you so much for coming on the show.
My absolute pleasure.
I'm so excited to talk to you, especially when you just told us that you've watched Heartstopper through almost two times already.
Yeah, almost two times. Watched it on my own first, and then I'm forcing my partner to watch it now, and he's loving it as well.
Did you kind of see your story when you're watching this show?
I did in some ways, yes, and in some ways, no, because there were so many parallels. But at the same time,
yeah,
for me, this was almost 20 years ago, you know, and so this show presents kind of a much more positive way that young people can come to terms with who they are than what I experienced. But it was just beautiful to watch as well, because it was exactly what I would have loved in every way.
Yeah.
When I was going through that, I was about in year eight when I figured out that I was attracted to guys. And at the time I thought that being gay was just the worst possible thing that I could be, mostly because of the language that other people used, you know, around at the playground. The word gay was used to mean bad or weak or stupid or disgusting. And I guess I really internalized that. And so I figured that that's what other people were going to think about me. And I would lose my friends. My family would be disappointed in me. My life would be terrible. You know, I didn't have any positive role models, like, you know, in the show. I didn't know of anyone else who was out at school anywhere. I was at a religious school, no less, so that felt even harder.
Totally.
You know, I remember making a promise to myself that I would never act on these feelings. I, you know, thought that I'm going to go through life, marry a woman, have kids and a family, and do all the things society expects of me, and no one should ever know that I'm gay. And, you know, that was it was hard because I, wishing that I wasn't gay or trying not to be gay, that was a real uphill battle. It wasn't something that I could change. And, I was feeling pretty isolated at that point.
That is so much for a kid to take on and deal with alone. How did you get through that? How did you cope with all of these feelings that you were feeling as a kid?
Look, it was really hard, and there was a while where I didn't cope. I struggled a lot and, had some pretty dark thoughts. And I kind of came to the point where it was going to go one of two ways. Either I was going to tell someone or I was going to end my life. And I reached out to a family friend who was a girl and sort of felt safer to come out to a girl because the feeling around straight guys at school was that being gay was something disgusting, that they would hate you or that they would think that you're trying to hit on them and they won't want to be around you because that's just the worst possible thing. And so I spoke to a girl who didn't go to my high school as well, so that also felt like a safer bet in case she didn't react well and it got out. But her reaction was completely positive, and that was the start of my journey towards self-acceptance. I kind of, if she could be okay with it, then other people might be okay with it. And if I only am going to live one time, then I may as well be who I am and do what makes me happy and not worry so much about what other people are going to think about me. But I still spent a lot of time hiding from people and being afraid of how they would react to me.
I think it's like so fascinating that your story, it's so in the world of sports because, I never really was part of that world growing up. I found it like very hyper-masculine and quite scary. Was it so difficult like trying to find your way through that world of sports as well back then?
It was really hard. And I guess I came to the thought of I'm either going to have to be in the closet or I'm going to have to stop playing. It was one or the other. It didn't feel like it was possible. There are no openly gay male AFL players in the history of the sport. I didn't think that would be possible at all. And so I went to great lengths to hide my sexuality from my teammates, even though I was out to other people in my life. And, I remember always just second guessing everything that I said or did in front of them. I wouldn't get involved in conversations about relationships or what I was doing that weekend in case they might figure it out. And it really limited the kinds of friendships and bonds that I could have developed with my teammates while I was growing up with my, straight friends at school. I remember from, about year nine, just really drifting away from all of the straight male people at school. And I just, luckily, I was at a co-ed school, unlike the characters in the shows. But luckily, I have each other through friendships and relationships. Yeah. But I hung out with the girls because it just felt safer. I didn't feel like I might get beat up if someone found out that I was gay. I didn't really like the way that they talked about women. I didn't like hearing homophobic language, which was kind of what, especially in a group situation, straight guys in high school and in sporting teams especially, kind of feel like they have to do that in order to fit in order to be masculine. And I just found that kind of gross. But at the same time, I loved football. Like, I'd played it since I was a kid. I was really good at it. I'd taken home the best and fairest all throughout my junior football out in country footy and, got it. Was drafted into the Interleague and playing in the TAC Cup here in Victoria, which is sort of that step before AFL football. And so I was potentially going places with that, but, my football career is really defined between that time before I came out and after.
And after you came out in that sporting realm, how did you notice your life change?
So, it wasn't so much that I came out that I guess that I was found out, but it was really a blessing in some ways. I was an adult by this stage. I was 20, 21, 22 years old at university and playing club football. And I had made a promise to myself that if I ever got asked about it, that I wouldn't lie. Lying, I'd tried that before, but when it came to making up stories about having sex with girls, I had no idea what I was talking about. So that was hard. And it's exhausting to, maintain fabricated stories anyway. And
yeah.
I sometimes would use words like they and them instead of he or she to try and talk about who I might be seeing or something without and get around it. But I can remember very clearly the first time that it came up in conversation with one of my teammates. We were in the club rooms after training one night and he had broken up with his girlfriend. And I asked him what had happened and how he was doing. And after a bit of back and forward, he put it back onto me and he said, oh, what about you, Bawley? Aren't you seeing someone at the moment? And I said, yeah, I'm seeing someone. And my teammate said, well, what's his name? And my heart just started beating really fast. I thought maybe he was testing me or maybe it was a joke. And
yeah,
I just swallowed and said, his name is James. And my teammate said, well, has he come to any football matches yet? And I was like, no, he hasn't. And he said, oh, you should bring him down. It'd be really great to meet him. And, you know, that was just like this weight being lifted off my shoulders. Yeah. And the moral of this story isn't just to go up to someone who you think might be gay and ask them what their boyfriend's name is, but it was kind of him reaching out to me to say, we know that you're gay and it's not a big deal to us. It was only so much that I could hide. Someone who I went to uni with started playing football at the reserves and thought everyone knew, and it kind of got out. But like that part for me in terms of how my life changed was that because all of those fears that I'd built up for my whole life weren't realized. Part of me felt silly for thinking that I'd had to hide it for so long, but I really came to the realization that most of that homophobic language and behavior that was coming from my teammates wasn't actually coming from a place of like hatred towards me or towards people who are gay, but it was coming from a place of ignorance and not understanding the impact that that would have been having on one of their own teammates.
They need to kind of welcome you in to show that, like, that's not the attitude that they have or that they hold in their hearts. Is that kind of how it felt with them easing you in rather than you breaking through that way?
Yeah, it felt like all they needed was permission to not be homophobic. And then it was like a dam broke. And the homophobic language faded from their vocabulary from that moment on. You know, I think, you know, it became real to them that that would have a negative impact on me, and they need me to be at my best so that we can win games of football. So, you know, what's the logic in that? And, you know, it wasn't just that they stood by my side when I came out. I guess it was their support that really gave me the confidence to come out in the media. And it wasn't just around my club, but thinking back to the times when I was wishing that I wasn't gay, especially in that hyper-masculine, macho sporting world, if I had have known of such thing as a gay footballer, like if I had have known that he could be out to his teammates and that it would be okay, that that would have completely changed my life. And so that was my motivation to do that. And not only did my teammates stand by my side when I came out, but when I came out in the media, they were there by my side as well. They marched by my side when I was invited to lead Pride March. And, you know, we created a Pride Cup where we themed one of our sporting games around LGBTI inclusion and painted our 50-meter line rainbow and had rainbow jumpers for both of the teams, which was just such a special moment, not only for me, but to think of the message that that was sending out to the rest of the community and to young kids who are potentially going through exactly what I was going through.
Jason, one thing I'm kind of curious about, were you out to your family at this time as well?
When I came out in the media, in a way, it was the first time I had a proper conversation with my parents about it. And that was not because they didn't know, because they had figured it out many years before. But I had kind of taken the approach of, well, if my sister doesn't have to come out as straight, then I'm not going to come out as gay, which was actually code for I'm petrified they're going to be disappointed in some way. So I just never want to have that conversation if I could help it. Yeah. And so, you know, there were moments where I could tell that they knew, but I kind of trained them to not ask questions about it. I would like shut down if they ever did. And so when I made the decision to come out of the media, obviously I need to talk to them before I did that, and said, Mum and Dad, you know how I'm gay? And they're like, yeah. And then me coming out in the paper was me coming out to my extended family and my grandparents. Yeah. And I remember getting messages from them saying that, you know, they loved me and they were proud of me and stuff like that, which was really beautiful. But my first boyfriend, James, who I mentioned before, he did it differently, right? He, like, you know, in the show, he's out to his parents, sits them down, says, Mum and Dad, I'm gay. And, you know, the mum's upset for a bit, but then gets over it. And the difference is when I was brought into his home, I was introduced as the boyfriend and I was made to feel part of the family and we could talk about anything and it was so nice. But then when he came to my house, it was like this awkwardness. Is he a friend? Is he a boyfriend? We don't really know. And I wanted what he had, you know, with his family. And it made me think that if I had have sat my parents down and just told them so much earlier, it actually would have brought us closer. It actually would have meant that I could have had what James had with his parents and how they were able to talk about these things. So I guess it's sort of a lesson for other people who might be listening. You know, from my experience, coming out to my parents was the best thing that I ever did, and I wish that I had done it earlier.
And so in this time since you've come out, you've created this Pride Cup, to now, how much of a change have you seen in the attitudes around sport and in particular Australian rules football?
I mean, I think we still have a way to go, but I have seen a lot of changes, especially at the grassroots level. I now know of many people in exactly my experience who have come out in the grassroots in their community club and have had exactly the same supportive reaction from their clubs. And we've seen, you know, Pride Cups at all sorts of different levels, from AFL at the elite level down to grassroots and through all different sporting codes like cricket and rugby. So those barriers are starting to break down. We've seen through doing events like that, that the use of homophobic language fades in those environments as well. And so much of what kept me back when I was younger was the language that people used. And so that's a really good first step towards creating a more inclusive and welcoming environment.
It's so interesting how you just said, like, just that homophobic language changing changed the culture that around you, that you felt in the club and in sports in general. What's something small that people can do?
Yeah, I mean, you've hit the nail on the head. Language is a really big thing, and it can seem so small to people who aren't impacted negatively by it, but all of the researchers told us that young people do feel distress when they hear the word gay used in a negative way, even just to mean bad or dumb. To have a no-tolerance approach to the use of that language, let alone the kinds of, you know, homophobic words that can be bandied about, especially on a football field, can seem like a really small thing, but it's so powerful in terms of how young people view themselves. And I think, you know, that's what's so important, just to have the courage to be okay with who you are and to not have that reinforced in a negative way.
I think one thing that's so interesting is that, you know, the three of us here, we're about the same age. I do think
21.
Yeah, we're all babies. We're all
fresh
kiddos.
Babes. Yeah, that's us.
But do you see, like, with the younger generations now, do you see that society is progressing with, like, the new youth?
It is changing so much. It is changing so much. And I think the show is a reflection of that in a way, because I do feel like this is a reflection of actually what it's really like in schools in some places at the moment. It's such a positive experience where you are having young people coming out in school, feeling like they can be themselves, finding love, having support from their teachers, from their parents and their friends. And it's such a different world than I experienced. And it's kind of this combination of being so happy for the next generation, but also like so jealous.
Absolutely, right?
Yeah. You know, it really does encapsulate everything that I yearn for from my schooling experience. And, you know, there are times where it's still confusing and scary for the characters in the show, but, you know, it's really nothing like the trauma that many people of my generation might have experienced, or that, you know, what is typically represented in films and television with gay storylines. And it just shows that when you have a safe space through supportive friends and teachers and parents, it allows queer young people to come of age and figure out who they are and experience closeness and friendship and love. And it teaches them that they deserve that, you know, that they deserve more than hiding and secrecy and isolation.
Yeah. I think what you do so much with your advocacy is that you really hold that idea of like continuing to make the world like a nicer, better, more progressive space. Is that something that's always been a core value for you?
I think so. I do feel like I'm greatly motivated to try and create the world that I wish that I'd had. And so I know that sport in Australia is such a cultural juggernaut. And so if you can change sport, I feel like you can change culture.
Absolutely.
The other thing, because sport has traditionally been a really homophobic place, it's kind of the area where we need almost the most attention. And I think it's a reflection of the fact that hardly any male players have felt comfortable to come out at an elite level, shows that we still have a way to go, but we're starting to get there. And Josh Cavallo in the A-League came out recently at Adelaide United, which, you know, just took the whole world by storm, because football, soccer, it's an international game. And so he made headlines all over the world. And he's now looked up to as a role model by so many young people who know that, you know, being gay, it's not going to put them into a box or define who they are. They can still be anyone. They can be an elite footballer, but you can't underestimate the power that that has for a young person's sense of self.
Yeah. What's the next thing that you're tackling at the moment?
Look, I think through the Pride Cup we
have built... sorry I said tackling. I just realized that's so stupid.
It's perfect. It's perfect. Look, we've built an amazing network through the Pride Cup movement, and really the next frontier for us is to turn the conversation from the LGB towards the T, because we know that the trans and gender diverse and non-binary community face additional challenges when it comes to participation in sport, because it's traditionally a binary world of male sport and female sport. But also in society, we're about 10 years or more behind community awareness and attitudes, as we've seen with the gay, lesbian and bisexual community. So there's a lot of work to do there. And I guess I see myself as an ally for them in the same way that I'm asking straight people to be allies for us. And so for me, it's about really educating myself and learning and elevating trans voices and experiences. And another, you know, tick to the show Heartstopper is it's got a really great trans storyline to it as well. And it's, you know, the thing that I really loved is that like there's experiences of homophobia or transphobia, but they really only loom in the background of the show through like some immature taunting and stuff by classmates, and even things like having the bisexuality acknowledged as a legitimate option instead of a fork in the road between gay and straight, or this stereotype that you're bi now and gay later, like, which can be really damaging for that community. And so, you know, that for me, it's about expanding beyond just my experience and really seeing what we can do to leverage the power of sport to help the whole gamut of diversity of different expressions of gender and sexuality.
So for straight people listening, how would you ask them to support this work and support this kind of shift of the culture?
The next step is about going beyond just not being homophobic, and it's about being proactive and visible in saying that we accept you, we love you, you're safe to be who you are. I think that rainbow symbol, you know, that international symbol of LGBTIQ pride, to see that splashed across a game of AFL football, which traditionally, you know, gay people haven't felt comfortable or safe, you know, whether it's holding their partner's hand in the grandstand or coming out as a player. It's that message of safety and being welcome from a place where historically you've experienced it the least. And so I think that people who are straight and cisgender have so many opportunities to do that in their life, to go beyond just not being homophobic and move beyond silence and actually become advocates, show your support, be vocal in your support.
Jason, it's been so beautiful talking today. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast.
My absolute pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
One thing that Jason touched on is that he really loved seeing that support from the teachers in Heartstopper, and I loved that too. I think it's also what makes it such a beautiful show is that it's so uncynical. It's not showing a world that is inherently at odds with who these kids are. It's a world that it's difficult for these kids to navigate through, obviously, but it's also full of love and through connection and like identity that is like nourished and loved.
Ooh,
and
yes.
And it made me cry when I watched it because I was just like, oh, all I wanted as a kid was to be affirmed. This is not even as like a queer person or anything, but just as like a kid. Totally. All I wanted was someone to say like, you're doing okay. Like you as you are is enough. Mm. And it's like beautiful.
That's why I'm such a champion of teen movies, teen cinema, teen shows like this, because I think they are like that necessary reflection that people need. Like people go to watch movies and TV shows not always for escapism. It's to find comfort usually. And I think having these reflective shows like this that show this kind of like real world, like, and show these lives that we don't always see and we haven't seen a lot before until these days, I think they're so important. I think teen movies are the best at doing that because it's the shared experience that basically every single person on the earth have. Mm. We've all been a teenager. We've all felt freaking weird with like hormones pumping through us, making us go crazy. We all have like the high stakes of high school. It's the most relatable period in the world.
Yeah.
I think that's why I still am drawn to teen shows. I think I'm more drawn to them now when I'm older and a little bit more nostalgic. It's like looking at a photo album or a clicking through a MySpace profile of like what my childhood or my teen years were like now. And I think that this show like nails all of that. I think it's really, I keep going back to it, but it's the word of the day for me on this show. It's lovely. And how often do you get to describe a show like that? It's lovely. It's full of love. And the thing that I loved most about it was a big surprise. I didn't know Olivia Colman was going to be in this show.
I know.
And when she just pops up, I'm like, what? I just was like, this has just like ascended to another level for me.
Yeah.
And then she's just got such a beautiful part. You know, I love Olivia Colman. This whole young cast is so great too. But that was like a surprise of the century.
Well, I think also, right, Olivia Colman is the platonic ideal of a mom in this show.
Yes, big time.
Loving, understanding, caring, sweet.
Yes.
And also just being Olivia Colman. That's also an asset in just itself. And what I like about this show, and it's, again, something that Jason touched on, is that it is a show about how we wish the world could be a bit kinder and a bit more understanding. And I think something that Jason's brought up so many times in his discussion around language and how just changing that little thing can really like change how people experience the world. I think truly I do believe that we watch these shows and I do think they have an impact because it does give people a model or a blueprint, as Jason said, on how to find that kindness in their own world, in the real world.
Jen, that's so beautifully put, and it's such a great way to end our discussion on Heartstopper. I highly recommend it to everyone listening. It's on Netflix right now. Heartstopper, check it out.
And thank you again to Jason Ball for coming on the show and sharing his amazing story.
If you have a similar story you'd like to share with us, then send us a DM on Insta at NetflixANZ.
And please leave us a review on Apple or Spotify and let us know what is the last thing you watched that made you cry tears of happiness.
This podcast was recorded on Gadigal land.
And if this episode brought up anything for you, please get in touch with Lifeline on 13 11 14. Thank you so much to our executive producer Priya Tyazadeh and our producer Abby Lenton.
And thank you to all you listeners. Have a beautiful day and a splendid tomorrow. Goodbye.
Goodbye.